introduction as to Colin Lear. Colin and I used to be, I don't know what we were, co-located in that office in Haymarket, and it's delightful to see him now back as head of the improvement service. I don't mean back, but as head of the improvement service. Colin's going to talk to us a bit about systems that underpin this kind of thing.
Okay, good evening, folks. You're suffering, you've had quite a lot of talking to, so interrupt me at any point if it makes your life feel slightly better. Active participation being part of curriculum for excellence that we should encourage. I remember when I first became a university lecturer, I was told by a head of department very cynically, you must go on this induction thing and they'll teach you how to lecture. And a man spoke for the best part of 2.5 hours about how nobody can take anything in if you speak for more than 20 minutes, with no apparent irony whatsoever. So I will take it that our concentration spans will be diminishing by now, so I'll hack on. I don't want to rehearse a lot of what's been said, so I suppose I was asked to talk about are schools to be seen as a force for good. And I guess the questions already posed kind of raise a question about that itself. What sort of good are we seeing schools as they are to create? I would have said, notwithstanding all of the introductory discussions and the rhetoric around it, there has been a very hard focus in the UK across the last 20 years on the economic role of the education system in developing and preparing people for participation in the kind of labour force we have at the present moment, not the futuristic ones we may wish to speculate about or aspire to, but very much the labour force of the present. And that is about creating people who will be productive and value-adding in that context. Also, quite a strong role, probably more articulated by people like Michael Gove down south than by policymakers in Scotland, but the idea there is somewhere a unifying value in cultures that you could quite readily transmit to pupils through a school system and a curriculum system without much reflection on how we handle the genuine and contentious political and social issues of value difference, cultural difference within our society. I suspect any of our pupils observing what happened in France across the last 3 weeks will have been impressed by two things. Obviously, the much condemned element of a massacre of people. But some of the French response in the spirit of curriculum for excellence also looks remarkably odd as well. An utterly aggressive secularism that seems utterly and radically disrespectful of a whole range of values that actually exist within French society. The continued belief there's a kind of Napoleonic culture to be had in France that can be uniformly imposed and so on. So there are any discussion of this, I think, needs to move beyond the idea of unity about values. And even, I think, where we began with the introductory presentation about what we see around the value system in Scotland, about social justice and so on. Many of you are working with pupils in the context of massive economic and social injustice. So simply saying the value system is social, well, it isn't in practice and it isn't in the realities of people's lives and outcomes. So there needs to be a bit here if we're saying to our pupils and our learners, develop the skills for critical appraisal and challenge, that we don't seem as if we're radically and rampantly uncritical about the context in which we find ourselves as teachers and the context in which our pupils are operating. The bit that I would agree with is any way we teach and any way we run a school system will indeed communicate values to people. Some of the most important ones, however, may well be the ones that are less explicit and more implicit. We get taught the structure of relationships through school, of what authority is and what subordinacy is, and that carries us on usefully into adult life and working life. We get taught the structure of time and the fact that other people can dictate the structure of your time for you. So even if you'd rather carry on doing maths, it's now art or it's now PE and off you go, because that's the way the curriculum's put together. You didn't choose it. It sets a structure of time for you. So there are things we will indeed communicate to students. Whether they're always the ones we would like to formally espouse, I think, will be a challenging question. Finally, I think schools are a force around political issues, and I would say I think Curriculum for Excellence at a second has much encouraged a more honest and open discussion around politics, social participation. A lot of schools doing fantastic work around kids volunteering into contexts they would never have experienced before or understood before, and that itself is a way, of course, of those children developing political ideas as they observe how other people live and the fairness or unfairness of that. So in a whole range of ways, I think schools are seen as a force of good. What I would say to you is I think you've been asked to do one hell of a lot of you by that. That not only are the future of the economy, but if you wouldn't mind sorting out our social value systems as a society, and on top of that, get people who want to participate in political systems, because last when they haven't for the last 50 years, that'd be absolutely cool, and the rest of us can now retire and enjoy a happy life while you're doing that. So there is a big, big agenda that we need to get realistic about, and I suspect I have a 15-year-old at secondary school just now who's in her N5 year. That actually the pressure on teachers is disproportionately around academic attainment and how that fits into our sense of the economy, and much less at all about developing rounded, creative, autonomous individuals who think for themselves and so on. Indeed, looking at a comment and some work my daughter have done, it said, "This is fantastically clever. Never write that in the exam. They won't get it, and they only give marks to what they recognise." A very interesting communication of values, which is stop thinking, for God's sake. Don't be creative, because nobody will recognise creativity when they're trying to mark 46 exam scripts simultaneously. And I know that pain from being a university lecturer and marking undergraduate work. So on the one hand, I think we are asking schools to be a force for good. On the other hand, there is no question, and we usefully had a rehearsal of the OECD stuff. I think what's very interesting from the most recent OECD work is its intra-school variation in Scotland rather than inter-school variation. That's the really striking phenomenon. The same kids exposed to the same richness of educational resources are achieving radically different outcomes and are getting radically different value out of the school context. That's not because the teachers suddenly get worse as they move from class to class. It is because the whole background those children are coming from make it harder for them to derive value out of the education system and perhaps even experience themselves to be valued within the education system they're participating in. The more there is a pressure on schools, the school my daughter goes to has 40% of kids defined as deprived, that seems to create an even more mammoth pressure on people who might get 7 in 5s, 5 hires, that you invest massive resources to make sure they do that, whereas other kids who arguably need the resources more are not getting the same richness of resource because they ain't going to deliver the 5 hires at the end of the year. I do not blame you for that contradiction, because it's a contradiction imposed by performance management systems, government expectations, etc. But within that whole system of stratification, competition and grading, the irony is we build up the value of something that then if you're at the university end of it, you see through quite the other end of a telescope, frankly. At 5 points in my career as a university academic, which ran for the best part of 30 years, you get told you're on admissions this year. This is not something greeted with a massive amount of enthusiasm, I'd have to say. What was interesting is by the end of that, you're just counting numbers, frankly. There are character reference statement head teachers, but you ain't reading them. If you ain't get 5 hires, frankly, you're not getting into this course anyway, so that's that done and dusted. So there is a bit, I think, where the drive down from what we take to be the requirements of employment and higher education back into schools is contaminated. Even the fact we measure ourselves in tariff scores, which were derived from the UCAS admission system to university, is grotesque as a way of evaluating the achievements of all young people in Scotland. 50% of people going over near a university in their lives and perfectly properly won't want to go anywhere near. They've got better things to do with their lives than come and visit us. There is a question, I think, rightly raised about if we are going to have a value or character based in whose version of values and what values. And we need to talk more honestly about that, I think, and how we follow through in that. We also have to acknowledge schools are in sense necessarily because I'm overwhelmingly impressed when I attend my daughter's school. I am terrified by the scale of the thing. And if they're changing class, it's utterly horrific to be. I'm just intimidated by the whole damn thing. If I was a vulnerable child, God knows what you'd make of a place with 1,600 children in it. And a tremendous census could tip into chaos at any point in time if you don't keep a fair amount of discipline around that process. There needs to be a level of imposed authority in that context. There are far too few resources, though. When I started as a university lecturer, Stirling University had 1,800 students. It had two GP practices, a welfare team of 18 people. You look at the schools we're now running, the biggest I'm aware of, I'll probably be corrected by colleagues in the room, is 2,200. That's one hell of a lot of people. It doesn't have two GP practices, even though it made perfect sense for it to do so. It doesn't have a full-scale welfare team to support it, even though it made perfectly good sense for it to do so. So we are running on a scale that creates context for learning, but there's a necessarily quite high element of control from a safety point of view and so on. Equally, I think very often schools and parents teach kids irony rather than positive values. So we say, you just have to put up with this. We know it's as boring as anything else, but you've got to get through that before we let you do something interesting. And it's simply presented as a hurdle, not something to be valued. How can you value yourself doing that if you've just been told the people who are encouraging you to do it don't value what they've just encouraged you to do? And there's a range of paradoxes, I think, around our attitude to kids in education that ain't helpful in promoting the kind of positive commitment we've got. And finally, I think it's Holocaust Memorial Day today, but I think many people will think that the classic thing you should remember out of that is a powerful state dictating the character and values of a society, and doing so successfully through schools and education and state propaganda, that eventually the most horrendous of things were possible, because people had been radically softened up for those things through a very protracted process of development. So we now, I think, have a suspicion around the easy idea that character is unambiguously self-evident and we know what it is and we know it's a good thing. We don't. It's quite challenging. I also suspect that some of the allusions to virtue ethics and so on. I mean, it's interesting to reflect that Aristotle, the origin of virtue ethics, pandered to tyrants and mass murderers and quite happily tutored their children. Never did a damn thing for himself in his whole life because he had a slave society. He was quite happy with a society where women were radically marginalised and never reflected on it at all. He was about perfecting himself and nothing much else. So there is a challenge in there. If we're going to go down routes like virtue, let's have virtue situated, virtuous practice, not virtuous self-perfection as we go forwards. The link to character for me is, I think if we're going to make claims about character, you have to be saying something about what a good society is. And that's the type of claim we're learier about now. We're less clear anybody has the authority to dictate or determine that. And therefore, to some extent, I suspect, we tend to develop our children at their best almost into sceptics far too early, doubt any value system, because all of them are merely being asserted by somebody. And I agree there are real dangers in that, that what we breed is a generation of deconstructionists rather than people who are committed to anything in particular. We need also to ask questions about what we can ask of schools and school teachers in that context, because much of the discussion, I think, about character and values in education sees the school as the primary agent. I actually think schools are very dependent on other forces acting around them. And their agency, though important, is more limited and more circumspect than we sometimes imagine. We cannot ask teachers to undo what a society we have no intention of undoing. Again, if I take the pattern of inequality in education, when we look at community level across Scotland, and we'll publish a report next month that does that, the communities where kids are not succeeding and thriving in education are also the communities where the adults, males, are dying at 60, where the health and life expectancy is 45, where there are staggeringly high levels of benefit dependency and poverty. In other words, these kids don't just have a school in their lives, they've got a whole range of other things in their lives, and asking teachers to undo that through value education seems to be very odd. how do you follow through as a teacher? You get kids utterly fired up about eco-schools, and the day the flag is unveiled, all of us parents arrive in our Range Rovers and gas guzzlers, and nobody apparently sees any irony or paradox in that at all. Are we encouraging kids to slash the tyres of their parents' gas guzzlers so that they stop polluting the planet and destroying the forward environment for these children? I think there's also a challenge in schools. Are we helping people to fit in? That the core value is we need folk to fit into what we're doing. Are we trying to develop people who, yeah, fit in, but the people who are taking stock of it and asking questions? Or are we trying to develop people, and this is a creativity argument, who go against the grain? Easier, I think, to develop people who go against the grain if there's not 1,700 of them in far too compressed a place. Much harder to develop that if you've got these types of pressures on you. So I guess my sense is that, yes, it's right to expect teachers to develop capacities. I think the intellectual virtues you teach are of fundamental importance so that children can be more articulate and critical about values and value propositions put to them. But I suspect we are about building capacities rather than character. And I think some of that is critically influenced by people's experience of education. I think the ability to respect oneself is a capacity that can either be supported or stunted by the experience people have. That if they are valued in the context they find themselves in, they find it easier to have self-respect and easier to value and respect others. If they find themselves perpetually devalued in those contexts, that what they have to offer is not what anybody's interested in this place, much more difficult. And the sources of self-respect in school may be different than the sources of self-respect at street level. The very things the school would least like to see may be the things that get you some sense of self-respect when you're out in your community context. The capacity for self-reflection is something, I think, that's an intellectual virtue but also a moral one. And that's partly the ability to reflect on your own impact on a situation and other people within that situation, but also, frankly, for our more affluent and privileged pupils, as my daughter is in the school she goes to, the ability to reflect on the advantages of her own background and how she can share that with other people. The absence of self-reflection, I do well because I'm good, is to utterly misunderstand success and failure within the education system. I think everybody's mentioned empathy, and I think the emotionally intelligent alongside the intellectually intelligent bit is right. My 50-year-old said to me recently that I had the emotional intelligence of a wardrobe, which is probably a slightly harsh critique, but not far off the mark. But that was the product of an education system that positively valued the marginalisation of emotion. That was weak, and what was strong was intellectual analysis and acting on it. And I still exhibit some of these characteristics as you have gathered. Open-mindedness, by which I mean the willingness to challenge as well as be challenged. But that then we need pedagogical context in which challenge is legitimate, valued, and accepted. And again, I think the scale of those contexts and the complexity of controlling them leads us to be more or less open, frankly, to challenge in a school context. Decisiveness. The worst intellectual vice, in some ways, is constantly thinking about things and never coming to a conclusion. And we do need kids who can go out into the world and actually act, as well as think, and that combination of thinking and action, I think, right. Responsibility. And that's interesting because I think that's a capacity you can develop in people or a capacity you can stunt in people. I certainly found that some of the most high-performing pupils who came through to university courses I taught were very, very dependent. They were almost incapable of taking them. And there were tragedies every year of kids who'd been to very expensive schools who had been so pandered to that when they left school with the most important thing on the planet, they then arrive as a first-year student at university where they're the least important thing on the planet. Nobody frankly cared that much. And people would turn out 2 hours a week and chunter at them. And then it was get on and learn yourself. They were incapable of taking that responsibility without a managed transition. And universities have not always been good at managing that transition for the student. So is there a bit of how we go about allowing kids to take responsibility for their own learning? The theory is that, and yet when it comes to these are public examinations and the school will be judged on the performance, we tend to want to take the responsibility back off them. Let me see all of your work before you submit it anywhere and I will correct it for you so you get this right, blah blah. I'm not sure that is creating confident, able learners. I think that's creating dependent people, which is not what we want. And finally, and you have been this throughout my drivels, patience and resilience, I think, I'll definitely call for. And again, that bit of building up with kids, how do you get through the challenging bit of something, which is often the initial learning, to where you get payoff from it? But that does take support to be patient and support to see where the rewards come. So I suppose I think that character is a contentious way of discussing that, and probably unhelpful because it will raise hackles all over the place. But if we were talking about the capacities we want our kids to have, we need to be honest. The school context is but one context in which these capacities will develop, and we cannot ask schools to offset what the rest of society and the economy is doing to people in that respect. So it's how these two things come together, I think, that matter. Apologies, I said I'd be short, I wasn't. Thank you.